to make it transformative. Secondly, it seems to me that the left is too involved in isolated issues. You know, we've got to bring these issues together to create a mass social movement that in some way really challenges the kind of power that we're now confronting.
Only the beginning of the conversation. Henry Giroux, thanks so much for being with us. McMaster University Professor for Scholarship in the Public Interest. His new book, America at War with Itself. That does it for our broadcast. Owan, tomorrow is a very special day. Happy birthday.
Amy, thank you.
Well, we'll be
didn't need to mention that.
We'll be broadcasting Monday from North Dakota, from right near the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation. Tune in. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gattis, Dina Dina Guzder, Sam Malkoff, Robbie Karen, Honey Masood, Sharina Nadura, Andre Lewis, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nagera, and Paul Huckabee, our engineer. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Miriam Barnard, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grant, David Prude, Ariel Boone, Vesta Gadars. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much, and happy birthday, Juan.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Welcome to another edition of our public affairs program. We call it the new WHFR Journal because it's not the same as last week. And we do it every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. You can also always listen anytime after broadcast to a podcast of these shows. They're available on our website, whfr.fm. And you just click on the big button in the center of the page, talk shows, and then WHFR Journal, select, and then pick your date. And so we talk about Dearborn, the surrounding area, and all the important issues. Important, of course, to the Dearborn area is Henry Ford College. Okay, we're broadcasting from Henry Ford College, but who would know the college better than we do? Because we're here. And we have a special guest who's going to be telling us about a special opportunity for information and a little bit of education, too, about careers. And so we have Counselor Diane Green back with us. Welcome back to the new WHFR Journal, Diane.
Thank you, and thank you for having me back.
Well, you're very welcome. But it's what you and the counseling department are doing, that you're doing a lot of different things, all kinds of different workshops and presentations that will help our students know the direction to go in their programs here and also maybe in their careers. We like to especially mention, and once a semester, you're usually the person that comes in and talks about the career opportunities for non-traditional careers for either women or men. And one of those workshops is coming up on October 26th. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, we're really excited about this. And we are excited every year that we do this. We're in our ninth year of doing it. And it's a Perkins-funded event that we put on. And this fall, we're focusing in on those technology programs that are offered here at Henry Ford that lead to a career with a two-year associate's degree in areas of technology. So we're focusing in on, for example, energy tech, electrical tech, criminal justice, machine tool technology, hospitality. And we're looking at architecture, computer information systems, and also industrial drafting, CAD. And the focus and emphasis is going to be on women and women coming into these particular programs at Henry Ford Community College, matriculating towards an end associate's degree in those areas. So those are areas where we still find an underrepresentation of women in the field of work. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to do our part in introducing young women to these various areas of study.
Because there's no general reason why they shouldn't be considering these careers. If and once they know more about them, they might discover that they're interesting to them, that they're exciting, that they might actually enjoy doing it too. But if you don't know about it, you can't really make that decision.
And each year what we're finding with the groups of young women who've come through, they really latch on to a program as a result of just experiencing it in this seminar format. So we've had young women who, for example, last year, we had two young women who decided, I want to go into industrial drafting CAD. One young woman, we were in the architectural construction tech lab, and you know, they just moved to the main campus a few years ago. Mm-hmm. So we never had the opportunity for our guest participants to experience their lab. They were thrilled and excited and in awe. Mm-hmm. And there was one young lady who stood right in the middle. You know, they build a house every semester in the lab, a small house.
Okay.
And she stood inside of the small house and said, this is what I want to do. So right then and there, she made a decision that was speaking to her personal interest at a career level. So she ends up talking to the lead faculty person about that program, and Chad said, I will make an appointment and we will have even further discussions about the program.
And in fact, this seminar workshop, which is going to be Wednesday morning, October 26th, here on the campus, will actually be held in the Patterson Technical Building, which is also got a letter. Is it Building E?
Yes.
E for
excellent. I got to learn all of these, these letters.
Right. I got a note in the mail just how things have changed, and Diane and I have been here a few years. We have a lot of experience here, a lot of knowledge about the place. But you know, they numbered all the parking lots, too, as well as putting letters on the buildings. And so I got an email that today, because there's a big career expo right here in this building, Student Center, over 50 employers are hiring. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're hiring right out there right now. And so we've got a lot of people coming from off campus and on campus. Of course, our students that are getting interviews and signing up for more information and so on. But they say you can't park in today in parking lots 14 and number 1. So I'm thinking,
where's number 1?
I have no idea where those lots are.
And 14?
Right, yeah. But luckily, I did check yesterday. I walked around campus, and the lot I usually park in is number 12. So I thought, I'm safe. All right, I'm safe. But so it takes a little. And of course, this building, the Student Center, is Building M.
Right. Well, I flew in this morning and was met with the cones for parking lot 1, because that's where we park. And it's like, oh, gosh, now where am I going to park this thing?
Well, any sacrifice we have to make for our students,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
That's why
no
we're
problem
here.
With that. I just want to ask about some of the specific career areas. For example, hospitality education is one that they'll be talking about more. And one would think, if we think of restaurants and hotels, we see a lot of women visibly in restaurants and hotels, although usually it's the entry-level jobs, like
absolutely,
a wait person at a restaurant, or in a hotel, maybe just a receptionist.
Mm-hmm.
So I assume that they'll be talking about the whole range of full career opportunities, not just
right,
the part-time jobs.
And for this particular area, it's more culinary in terms of the chefs.
Okay.
And when you look at that area, it has been pretty much dominated by men.
Mm-hmm.
You're starting to see more women moving into culinary to the chef level.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a focus point. We're starting to see women say, hey, right, I can be a chef too.
And the same goes for criminal justice. Sometimes we see TV shows and there's female police officers.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, the criminal justice area has as many women in administrative jobs of all kinds.
Right.
Of course, there's prisons, you know, that area. But there's all kinds of jobs in criminal justice. And again, some women may say, well, it's just very dangerous out there on the streets with a gun or something. And well, it can be, of course. But, you know, it's there's a lot more to that. And you know, the best people, really the best people, the smartest people, need to go into that, as well as some other areas. What about telecommunication? Now, we don't have a presentation from Susan McGraw, our lead teacher in telecom and journalism here. But telecom, we see a lot of, for example, on broadcast TV and cable TV, we see a lot of women hosts, talk show hosts and so on. But I just have to say that there's a lot going on behind the scenes for women, too.
Absolutely. And that's a new emerging area that we would have to consider. Now, when we build the program, this event around programs here, we build them around programs that are, in fact, approved by the state.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure, and that's a conversation I need to have with Susan.
Oh, in
to
terms
make
of
that,
whether it's a technical career as
right.
such, yeah.
But she did ask. She said, "Now, sure, Diane, yeah, during mm-hmm. the event, would you mention our telecommunications
sure.
program?" And I said, "Absolutely."
Well, of course, we want to always stress that the telecommunication journalism areas, typically, if you want a full-time career in these areas, first of all, it is very competitive, but so the best get the best jobs, but also you really need a four-year background. So it's not a certificate sort of thing or
it's
a two-year program.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a transfer thing. You have to pick your transfer institution. It will be announced in the next week or two officially, but we've just completed. Susan had been working on with the head person down at Wayne State in their telecommunication area within their speech communication division for a new transfer agreement.
Good. That.
That's very, very solid.
That.
There's no questions and issues. And they're even requiring down at Wayne, when Susan told them about it, this WHFR staff training class.
Mm-hmm.
Before our students get down there.
Now, absolutely.
Of course, we're also making it a requirement for our own telecom two-year degree, too, because it's a real-world lab in one type of media presentation. You know, and you have to work as a team. You have to work with the rules. You're involved with the community. You're getting feedback. We get phone calls and emails from the public, depending on what we're doing, good and bad, and usually very good. But I will say that, you know, just like the business of the film industry in Hollywood, very sexist. And for years, there was that very bad reputation, and justifiably bad, is that the men dominated those industries and wouldn't let women in. In fact, I heard a film industry executive about a dozen years ago, and it sounds like 50 years ago, but majority of people working in the film industry in Hollywood are women. Yes, but they're secretaries.
Right.
They're secretaries.
They're
you know.
Not in those administrative decision-making roles.
Not many. There are a few that have risen to the head of various motion picture studios and so on. I don't think there's any there currently. But there's a lot more possibilities now that people are producing for cable TV and web-based services like Netflix programming and so on. So there are a lot of opportunity. And I will say that I think the sexism is declining. After all, Roger Ailes of Fox News, after his attitude towards women in the office was revealed, and he got out. He stepped out to become media advisor for Donald Trump, but that tells you something too, doesn't it?
It does. I
didn't make a comment there about the politics,
you didn't.
Did I? Not really.
No.
I'm just pointing out the fact that he got into trouble because of his sexual attitude and really sexual harassment of some of his employees just recently. And
right.
so he's
right.
gone now, and hopefully they're going to change things around there. So there are evolving places for women that are in a lot of careers and so many different tech areas that traditionally, what was it said? It was called women used to, it was said that women, very, this is very sexist, had math anxiety. That they couldn't do anything technical because they didn't know how to do math. They got all flustered. Well, that just, I think it's just crazy.
Well,
of course, if we get them in that mindset, then maybe it's going to hold them back. But we're trying to open them up here at Henry Ford College to all the possibilities.
Absolutely.
And there's nothing that should stand in their way for certainly anything on this extensive list. So how can you get into this, folks? It is a free program. Registration starts at 7:30 in the morning, but the welcome is at 8 o'clock, and then the presentations start, and they go all the way through noon. And at 12:30, they actually serve a little lunch and give you some door prizes, too, maybe. And so it's a lot of great information. And you don't have to be a currently enrolled student. They would appreciate it if you could enroll, notify them that you're coming. Certainly, in general, you could just try to contact anyone in the counseling office, and they know that it's either Cynthia Anderson or Brenda Redinger.
Mm-hmm.
And if I say this over the air, people probably won't write it down. But if it's a podcast, they can rewind it. Cynthia Anderson is at 313-845-9629. That's 313-845-9629. And Brenda Redinger is at 313-845-9617. Again, Brenda at 313-845-9617. If you just let them know, that way they'll have enough, chairs and door prizes and food for everyone. But you can just show up, too. It's in building T123. You can't miss that number.
That's right.
The tech building, which is actually building E. So actually, it should be E123, but they probably right, haven't changed their signs.
Well, no, they have.
Have they changed the sign? Because in this building, they just spray painted over all the C. It used to be building C for student centers, and they couldn't afford to change the sign, so they put black paint over the
That's what they did in our building. Yeah. But one thing I want to point out is this event is billed for even the focus actually is on for individuals who are considering career possibilities. Of course, current students are always invited, but we're reaching out to high school seniors, older returning adults, individuals who are working through agencies for programs of study. It's open to everyone.
Mm-hmm. But primarily women in this case.
Absolutely.
Because that's the focus. Well, I assume next semester we're going to jump back to men. Yeah. So this is the Imagine the Possibilities, the non-traditional careers for women in technology. Obviously, there's things beyond technology, but this one is non-traditional careers for women in technology. A week from next Wednesday, October 26th, and it's from 7:30 or at the latest you should arrive 8 a.m. to 2 p.m.
We believe in the early bird building. Catching that worm. Mm-hmm. So we look forward to folks joining us.
Sure.
So please come out.
That's Henry Ford College, main campus, 5101 Evergreen, again, October 23rd, 26th. And don't forget to try to call ahead to someone in counseling, Cynthia Anderson or Brenda. So just ask for Cynthia or Brenda. I assume there's only one of each. Okay. But Diane Green is a counselor here with us now. And just for another couple minutes, Diane, there's always things coming up that the counseling office is presenting, in addition to their usual services of counseling on an individual basis, too. You were counseled, John?
No, but I have once you.
John Conroy is here, of course, and
I have something
with me today, too.
To add.
Go ahead.
To ask. Mm-hmm. Hi, Diane.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you.
I went to a CHAMPS seminar this past Tuesday, and the counselor that was there speaking about Title IX and what has happened since Title IX was enacted. And I just wanted to know what's your perspective on women and not only athletics, but in other areas of Title IX has happened or have been affected since then.
I think we've made some significant inroads as it relates to issues that evolve out of Title IX. I think it's a very important piece of legislation that we need to and have to address. And as a matter of fact, all of the employees here at Henry Ford had to recently complete a Title IX online course, just so we, in fact, are aware of all of the components and aspects of Title IX, behavior in the workplace, behavior in the classroom, the interaction between student professionals with students, and it's a very meaty document in terms of the content. But I think it's important that we periodically experience that document and the contents of that document so that we understand what our responsibilities are as employees here at Henry Ford Community College. Being able to recognize inappropriate behavior for what it is, whether I'm walking through the Student Center building or I'm experiencing it in my office or I'm viewing it on campus, and my responsibility as an employee to report that behavior and how that particular title holds me responsible for doing that.
Well, and it was particularly timely with the comments from, again, we don't want to mention politics too much, but Donald Trump's locker room banter. And that was the top, or the one of the issues that the lady, that the speaker, I should say,
talked to,
spoke to with the students, you know. So, and they responded very well. You know,
which locker room banter of that sort is absolutely inappropriate.
Correct.
And it is harassment.
Yeah,
it is inappropriate sexual behavior.
Yeah, not just the talking, but the physicality that was mentioned.
Also, there was, and the differences between the female banter and the men's banter. There was definitely a difference between the two of them, how they came across.
Mm-hmm. Now, John got to sit through that seminar. I will say, and Diane knows this, at the college here, Henry Ford College, we take that seriously, and they actually found a very good online instructional program. It's a sort of a self-taught experience. I just completed it. It is required of all faculty and administrators
to
go through that. Yeah, a lot of questions, a lot of situations. Some of it's animated, some of it's video, and they show you sample. They go through the basic rules, but then they show examples from real life, and then they quiz you on those. They quiz you. Yeah, you know.
I thought it was very, very well done. Mm-hmm. I thought it was well presented.
Yes.
And I enjoyed going through it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and of course, I reflect back to the early days, since I have been here at the college now for 49 years, that a lot of this sort of thing, well, culture has changed in 49 years, obviously 5 decades, and a lot of these things are really not appropriate at all. I mean, if we want to treat everyone really equally and allow everybody their greatest opportunity to make their own choices, then we have to follow these sort of guidelines now. And it's too bad we have to spell it out, but in order to complete the changes that have happened in the last 5 decades, we have to have these guidelines and these responsibilities.
Mm-hmm. The setting of boundaries.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
In terms of what's appropriate and what's inappropriate.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know also in counseling, we should just plug that coming up, because we got a little sheet in front of me here that I could mention, but next week, Thursday, starts our second 8 weeks within our fall semester, and there's still some classes that people could enroll in, usually basic sections of maybe English or other things. I know there's another WHFR staff training class coming up.
And I think there's some math sections.
And some math sections open. So if you want to pick up one of the basic classes, either get started or you want to add it to your program or whatever, you can still do that, because the classes actually do start next Thursday.
Yes.
So you need to be enrolled before that. But you were mentioning that only the week after that, I think you said October 24th.
We begin the enrollment for the winter semester.
That's right. And, of course, that's a big-time thing,
right?
These main fall and winter semesters, a lot of different classes, a lot of different times, a lot of choices possible, and the people get their first choice, obviously.
And they've done a little changing this time around. We're looking at students who have 45 or more credit hours being given the opportunity to register.
Yeah, so it won't
first.
Be like October 24th for everyone.
Right, midnight. Everybody can It'll not exist anymore.
And if I can explain a little bit, anybody could guess at this, is that people that already have a lot of classes with us, they're trying to complete their degree or their certificate, and they need to get in there to get those classes at the time that they can fit them in so they can complete that program. It becomes much more important to get them at a time they can take them, but to get those classes in. So they, you know, that's done at many other colleges, if not most other colleges. There's sort of priority enrollment periods, and so you have to check after that. But if you are interested in next winter semester, certainly go to the website, hfcc.edu, and take a look at the basic information, how to become a new student. We have a newly designed college website. I thought the other one was pretty good, but this is got a lot more pictures, and it is
more
very
colorful,
very clean, and has a lot of information on it that's easy to access. So,
and I encourage students, current students, if there's any concern about what courses you should be taking next, please make your appointments early with the counseling division. Individuals who are planning on or considering Henry Ford, for your place of study. Get that process going. If you have questions about that process, call the counseling office at 313-845-9611 and make an appointment with one of us counselors, and we would be more than happy to walk you through that process and help you look at the program of your choice and those first courses you need to step off into in that first semester here with us.
And be sure to ask for Diane Green, of course.
Yes.
No, not, I mean, they're all very busy, but they're all qualified.
Yes. Wonderful, wonderful counselors.
Sure. So it's 313-845-9611.
Yes.
Henry Ford College Counseling. Thank you for being with us today on the Journal and talking about the non-traditional
career seminar. Thank you for having me. It's always
good to be here. Career seminar for women, October 26th, and we hope a lot of people will take advantage of that free opportunity.
We hope so.
Okay.
Look forward to seeing them.
Sure.
Thank you.
Here's a couple comments from Jack Lessenberry, and we'll go on. We have a big presentation. John and I has a lot to report on. As reporters, we actually attended a real event last night and took notes, imagine. And it's about the Regional Transit Authority that's going to be on the ballot, asking you for your support. New millage request coming up on November 8th ballot. So we'll be talking about that immediately after commentaries from Jack Lessenberry.
I'm Jack Lessenberry. When I was 8 years old, something historic happened. The first ever televised presidential debate between major party candidates. My lower middle class Detroit area family watched it together, as did many American families, and I was encouraged to pay attention. The following day, my fourth grade teacher encouraged discussion about the debate. I'm sure most of it was over my head, but I remember very vividly that everyone thought it an important event. However, I don't think our mothers would have wanted us to watch if there were any chance one of the candidates would have been asked to clarify a statement that he moved on a married woman like a bitch, or would be asked if he really grabbed women by the genitals, as he claimed in a videotape to have been able to do. We also had a strong and correct hunch that the Democratic candidate would be asked about her own husband's past behavior with women. Somehow I think my mother, who was a rather unanalytical Republican, would rather we watched the session of the Supreme Soviet instead. What made me actually sad last night, however, was not the sexual allegations and distractions. It was the amazing decline in the quality of our national discourse. I teach journalism history and have a DVD of that famous first Kennedy-Nixon debate, which was only an hour long. Well, I watched that debate again this weekend. The event became a political legend because, in it, Nixon, who'd been sick, was thought to have looked terrible, while Kennedy seemed tan and handsome. That was, in fact, more or less true, but that wasn't what most powerfully impressed me. Was that the candidate spoke to the American people like adults and talked seriously and substantively about the major issues of the day. They answered questions about whether the minimum wage should be raised and Social Security should be expanded to include health insurance for the elderly. They even debated farm subsidies. Neither Kennedy nor Nixon insulted the other man at all. When one of the reporters asked Nixon to respond to a comment by then-President Eisenhower that seemed to dismiss his contributions to the administration, he handled it with wit and charm. When Kennedy was asked about Nixon's claims that he was too immature for the job, he did the same. Nobody on that stage or in the audience could have imagined one of the candidates threatening to get a special prosecutor and put his rival in jail if he won. Nor could either party have taken seriously a candidate without a day's worth of experience in government. The men Kennedy and Nixon defeated for their nominations were all highly seasoned governors and senators. None would have roamed around the stage, babbling mindlessly to conceal a lack of understanding of issues and policies. No part of me wants to live in the world of 1960, where women weren't really equal, African Americans were being killed for trying to vote, and people thrown in jail for being gay. But presidential campaigns then were conducted on a level that showed respect for the citizens. The one we have now will be over, finally, in less than a month. Somehow, I'd like to see us try to fix this for the future.
Jack Lessenberry is Michigan Radio's news analyst.
Thank you to Michigan Public Radio for allowing us to use that podcast from a couple of days ago, of course. But Jack Lessenberry, they're talking about the last presidential debate. And of course, all opinions expressed on this show, the new WHFR Journal from WHFR.fm, the station making waves, are only those of the speakers and presenters, not those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College. Still putting that word community in there, but we are a good community, aren't we? Anyway, Henry Ford College faculty, administrators, staff, or students. But we do thank the administration for allowing us. What we're trying to do is fair and balanced speech about sometimes about topics that other media outlets are not covering. Now, you're going to be hearing a lot, and there's going to be a lot of TV advertising, political commercials, coming up soon, very soon, about the Rapid Transit Regional Transit Authority. Rapid is part of the idea, by the way. Millage that's going to be on the November 8th ballot. And John Conroy and I both attended, along with about 20 or so others, a presentation organized by the League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights, a great organization. I'm a member myself. To give some background. And we have a bunch of materials we received on it. There were people there who handed out the Vote Yes for Regional Transit brochure. A lot of people have endorsed this. A lot of government entities, a lot of cities, a lot of businesses. They had a presenter there from Beaumont Health. That is, of course, the organization that now runs what used to be called the hospital here in Dearborn. It's now Beaumont Dearborn. And, oh my gosh, all kinds of people and different groups, even Coalition on Temporary Shelter, the Ecology Center of Ann Arbor, all kinds of different people from many different backgrounds and are in support of this millage being passed. It is going to require that everyone in the four-county area, that's right, four counties, Wayne, Oakland, Macomb, and Washtenaw, that includes Ypsilanti and Ann Arbor out there. And so everybody in those four counties who's registered to vote and who does vote will get a chance to decide whether or not this millage is appropriate. There's a lot of information to understand. First of all, what will it cost if approved? The cost for the average household, if your house is appraised for $100,000, it's going to cost you about $20 a month each year. That's the estimate of the millage cost. And this is going to continue for 20 years. It's a 20-year plan. In fact, one of the documents that I handed out, that was handed out, is the League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights, a general election voter guide just for Dearborn Heights. So exactly what's on the ballot. Now that is a 8.5 by 14 inch stapled handout on white paper. And you can get that at many offices in Dearborn, like the Dearborn Administrative Services Center, which is the new City Hall, as I call it. Probably at even at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. But they also have, which is sort of a newspaper-like format, the 2016 Nonpartisan Voter Guide for Michigan. And so you really should try to find one of each of those, because they give you not just a list of what will be on the ballot, but also information about the candidates and about the issues. Just for example, since we're talking about the Regional Transit Authority proposal, I'm definitely going to let you tell us your spin on that too. So Okay. Check those notes there. But just as an example of how complete and how useful these League of Women Voters handouts are, and you can go to their website, League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights, just the first letter of each of those names, .org. Okay. And you can get to the same information, or you can also go to vote411.org as a website and put in your address and your zip code, and that will also get you the same information on your computer. Okay, but looking at the back part, because there's two proposals that will be on the ballot here in the Dearborn area for us to vote on, and one is the Wayne RESA proposals, Regional Enhancement Millage Proposals, and we'll talk about those in some other show. because that's, I think, a little confusing to some people. But the one that really deserves your consideration, serious consideration, is the Regional Rapid Transit Authority. Yes, the word rapid is in there. I said that first when I said RTA. And I said rapid is, of course, a hope, because public transportation is good, but it's not really useful unless it's somewhat rapid. If it's really slow or hard to access, then that's, you don't really have it. But in fact, RTA normally would just stand for Regional Transit Authority, which we've never had before. Never had before. Okay, so you can read the proposal, and it talks about the money and the 20 years that I mentioned already, and so on. But here's the assessment, briefly, about those who support the proposal that's in the League of Women Voters Dearborn Heights document. They say those who support the proposal say that a yes vote for the regional transit will benefit residents, communities, and businesses across Southeast Michigan by connecting Macomb, Oakland, Washtenaw, and Wayne counties, increasing independence for seniors and people with disabilities, connecting people to work, and boosting economic development. Currently, 92% of jobs in the region can't be reached within 60 minutes using existing transit. The American Public Transportation Association found that every $1 invested in regional transit returns about $4 in economic benefits, therefore increasing economic growth. Reliable, connected regional transit will ensure frequent, seamless service throughout the Southeast Michigan for the first time. For more information, visit rtamichigan.org, which is their regular work site. By the way, the RTA was formed 4 years ago and started meeting with their appointed representatives from each county 2 years ago, we learned. And they had just enough money that was given to them by the legislature. Again, it was approved by our state legislature, which always somehow makes me suspicious of the goals. But and they put some money there for the organizational efforts for the first couple of years. But this is the first funding proposal to actually make something happen. So they have a proposal of how to start. They brought a lot of people together for 2 years, a lot of groups, and they looked at what they have and how they can build on that and coordinate them all. And now they need money to run it, because if this proposal doesn't pass, I don't know, they might come back again with another one. I don't know. We heard last night that they will only have enough money for four people to have jobs next year at the RTA if this doesn't pass. And so that's just enough to clean up the offices, I think, that they have now. So this just won't happen without support to actually make it a functioning organization and to actually buy some of the physical things that are needed. So that's sort of a quick summary, a little addition of mine to a yes vote. And I'm going to go back and say some other things later, and we'll go to John after I mention those who oppose the proposal. We did have a couple of things that were handed out at the meeting. There is a website, I think it's nomasstransit.org or .com or something. What did I do with that flyer? Well, anyway, they said a few things, and I can comment about that too, but here's the League of Women Voters summary for those that oppose the proposal. These people say, if passed, all taxpayers would have to pay the millage. Well, those who have property. Okay. Mm-hmm. So if you're living in an apartment, you don't pay it. Although indirectly, your landlord would have to pay. But, you know, and so your rent might go up. But you know.
The owner of that building would have to pay.
Also, homeless people do not have to pay.
No, that's true. No.
Okay. But all taxpayers, all homeowners, would have to pay the millage of approximately $95 a year for 20 years. Again, it depends on your property value. So in other words, if you have a very expensive home, yes, you'll pay more. So it is a percent of the value of your home. So in a way, it's a graduated tax, depending on the value of the home that you have chosen to live in. But anyway, there is that amount of money that you'll have to pay now for 20 years, every year, even if you do not or would not use public transportation. Public transit users should be paying the cost themselves, they say, the opponents say, including costs for expansion and improvements. The transit plan is not going to help every community in the four counties equally, and it's not fair for all to pay the same tax. There is no also opt-out provision in the proposal, which means that if the vote passes, all county residents, again, if they have a home they reside in, will pay the tax regardless of the service to their local community. Okay. So, John, why don't you sum up a few points, pro or con, or both, that you heard last night and give us some of your thoughts.
Sure, Jay. One was brought up that that this downriver community would not be so well served by this proposal, and that we could use some more services in that area. And because they talked about having it benefiting, let's see, oh yes, the Ypsilanti area, the Metro Airport. Dingle train station in the New Center area in Detroit, mm-hmm. but some of the other what I don't call outliers, but apparently this transit authority thinks is outliers, aren't getting that much attention. Mm-hmm. And there were a few questions brought up about that in the in the session last night.
And rightly so. Yeah, I have a response. You want to hear?
Go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, first of all, folks, what you have to keep in mind about this. And there are several things, but is that this is the beginning, okay? We've had no coordination of these services on a regional basis. And every successful city anywhere in this country, even smaller than Detroit, has a regional plan. Or, as in the case of Austin, Texas, they just enlarged the city limits of Austin to incorporate some small communities. Why? So they could have one government and one plan and one service for everybody. There's no question about who operates what. It's the city of Austin, and it goes for miles, and they got buses and trains, and it's all under one umbrella. Los Angeles has done that too.
Yeah.
They have expanded the city limits, and I know it sounds crazy to some people here, but the equivalent would be, and the best answer, is to make Detroit as big as these four counties. In other words, bye-bye Washtenaw and Ann Arbor and Macomb County and Oakland County, and it's all one city because that's the region. And regional planning is the way to get the greatest efficiency and the greatest value for the money, okay? And so rich communities, poor communities, little communities, big communities, they're all equally served by one staff. And right now we have
Many splinter groups.
Yeah, well, we have services for some that are good in some areas and not so good in other areas. Not everybody can get a smart bus, I guess, equally. Not too far downriver, they can't get it, for example. And this is the bare bones. They looked at the major corridors to start increased rail and bus transport. Okay, and then they'll build out later. I mean, it's just the beginning. I mean, this plan and the funding will go 20 years. And somebody did ask a good question about, well, why 20 years? Why not just a couple of years and we'll see how it goes?
Right.
Because they can get government funding. Federal government is willing to do matching funds. So this amount of money over 20 years, they think will raise about $2.7 billion, I believe, in funds from residents in these four county areas. And the government, they're expecting the federal government will match that. And so we'll get a lot more value for the dollars that we put in to help get this thing really going. And the initial plans for development of rail and rapid bus lines, it might even take 4 or 5 years to get those in place, they mentioned last night. But then they can keep building and keep growing under a regional authority. And the only other example I can give you, one that's working really well, is the Regional Water Authority. It's not just Detroit Water now. Yeah, we talk about Detroit Water System and so on, but it's under a regional authority. So the setting of rates for the water and the maintenance of the water system has to do with at least three of our counties, maybe all four. Does Ann Arbor share in this water from Detroit?
No, they do not.
Well, maybe they're not part of it. Maybe Washington County is not part of that. But we do have a regional authority now that goes way beyond Detroit city limits for water. Why? Because that was the right way to think about it, to pay for it, to organize it for the future, and to the benefit of everybody who's living in those areas. So the reason why the program to match those people like from downriver and say that, but there's nothing in there for us. Well, not right now. But you've got to get the bare bones going and the organization going, because there's no money to do anything at this point. And right now they got no service, right?
Right.
Okay. So so it's going to take some time. These other communities that are so successful, I mentioned Austin, Texas, but there's many other examples. They've been at it for years, for decades, and it's all built, and it's all together, and it's all working. And so we're following their plan, but we're like several decades behind, of course. Yeah. And yes, it's going to cost more money. Let me talk about the money thing, John. Go ahead.
On an encouraging note, during this session last night, what I did like hearing was about creating the culture of health, and two keys being more active living and healthy eating to control obesity, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and that this new transit or more available transit can help with health benefits, physical activity, air quality, and green space. And currently, the number was said, or she stated a number, that 3.6 million Americans have trouble getting to a simple thing like a doctor's mm-hmm. appointment. Mm-hmm. And that, so this general idea is going to give access much better to folks, not only just for doctor's appointments, but for overall health. And I was very encouraged to hear that, because we all know there's way too many people that are sedentary, and especially in homes and rehab centers, that they just don't have, you don't have the access to improve yourself when you're, and even it's not just when you're 75, 80, 85 years old, when you're in your early 50s and 60s, people are just too sedentary, you know. So the creating the culture of health and healthy space in Dearborn, for now it's Dearborn, Taylor, Trenton, and Wayne. These are very good steps, I believe.
Yep, I agree. I think it's a great sounding plan. I wanted to mention about costs.
Yep.
These other communities around the country who have these systems that really work. I mean, buses in every corner. I mean, over the summer, I visited again one of my favorite cities in Canada, which is Toronto. And they have a very crowded downtown, especially because they put in bicycle lanes almost everywhere on every street, which means less space for the cars. And they've got several kinds of buses and an overhead electric bus system, and then they've got hybrid buses running on clean energy that drive on the regular streets, mm-hmm. and then they've got a lot of cars. And of course, the downtown is, it's a big city. It's like New York City, okay, but in Canada, all right. It's just really, really busy.
And the subway system, of course.
But they have a wonderful subway system and a train system, a commuter train system that a lot of people ride. I was talking to someone who was working in a museum at the Royal Ontario Museum, and they said, I don't know how it came up, but they ride a commuter train in every day from a community southwest of Toronto, and it's an hour ride, but it's a commuter train, and it actually would take him close to 2 hours to drive it, and a lot of traffic, on all the roads and that, and their train station is just really busy with commuter trains, and that's one reason the city has increased so much in its excitement and jobs for people, is because people can come from 2 hours away car drive to work in the city and then go back home, and it doesn't cost them that much. Not as much as a car at all. No. And I mean, it's very reasonable. In Austin, you can get as a tourist for $1.25 a day, you get a full day ticket.
Wow.
Any bus you want, on and off, $1.25 a day as soon as you start, with the first buying the ticket, mm-hmm. until midnight. And that's so reasonable. I think in Toronto, it's a little more expensive for all day pass. It may be $2, but that's Canadian money. I'm sorry to our listeners in Canada, but their money is worth less than the U.S. dollars. So I just want to point out. But so it all depends on how much the community wants to keep the prices low so they get maximum usage out of it for the people that have less money, too, which brings up a concern about how we feel about any project like this that's good for everybody, whether you use it or not. I mean, how much sort of social concern do you have? Folks, I hate to go back in history, but before those pilgrims got off the Mayflower, We're approaching Thanksgiving a month from now. Okay. Okay. Before they got off the Mayflower, they waited, what was it, a week or a month? They're docked, but they didn't want to even step foot on shore yet. Not because there was Indians there with bow and arrow pointed at them. No. But they wrote a document that they had everybody sign to promise how to stay civilized, to how to organize themselves, and to represent everybody's common good. It's called the Mayflower Compact. And we study that in history and so on. I don't have a copy in front of me. But I'm just saying, how much responsibility do we have in each society for all of us in our society?
How you will conduct yourselves as a civilized society. Yep.
You know, we do have systems that people are very happy with, that have worked out really well. Perhaps not quite for everybody, but Social Security for people after they retire from their jobs. Medicare and Medicaid for those slightly younger. And now the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, which covers the gap there for people under Medicaid and even people who are on Medicaid, if they qualify and if they pay money into the system, of course, a little bit individually. And some people are saying that health care should be considered a social right for everybody, which means, as they understand it in Canada and France and Germany and England, for example, name dropper that I am, that health care should be a guaranteed right for all people. In other words, the government pays for it for you. You've got choices, but everybody pays tax in to support that system. Okay? Everybody pays tax to support that system, and everybody takes advantage. And your drugs are paid for up front, and your doctor bills are paid for up front, and you get quality health care. I mean, international surveys have proven that we have one of the most expensive health care systems in the world on a per-person basis, what the costs are for the individuals that are paying into it one way or the other. And we don't get the best care. Okay, we're only seventh in terms of quality health care in a wide range of different topics. Oh, yeah, you could cherry pick one advantage or one problem with each of these different international systems of what's called universal single-payer health care. But is health care a right? A lot of people are beginning to think, well, maybe it should be. Public education is a right, or at least it always used to be, you know, that the government will provide as part of the dollars you pay in, of course, everybody's paying in to support the public educational system. It hasn't been supported real well, my humble opinion, in Michigan for the last few years, and neither has our higher ed system. It's pathetic how little money from the state and from us has gone into supporting quality higher ed for our people. Also, we can mention about oh my gosh, the cost of higher education, and that some political candidates, Bernie Sanders, and Hillary a little bit, were talking about, you know, somehow relieving or eliminating, oh my gosh, all the debt by making higher education, for those that qualify, free. And you might say, well, it's a wild and crazy idea. Well, California had it for many years. If you were a resident of California, up until Ronald Reagan took over as governor, who ended it, if you were a resident of California, you got, and you qualified for admission, you got admission into the University of California, one branch or the other, one location or the other, for free. I think you had to buy your own books or something. But and that's right. If you qualify, why shouldn't you be able to get the education? You know? And I mean, so I think there's a lot of things that should be considered as a social responsibility. Yes, it means that everybody has to pay their share. Mm-hmm. And if it's a millage, it means that the rich people pay more than the poor people because they probably have a bigger house.
Yeah.
You know? And so in a way, it's a little bit graduated or progressive, if you will. And I think that's appropriate because obviously poor people can't pay the same amount. They don't have as much discretionary money, so-called, as a richer person. And so we have to, I think that's because I heard a lot of people saying, one of the documents, John, that I had was for the people who wanted a no vote. I said, look, current proposal, you don't have to approve this, folks. We just have to approve the money, and it'd be a lot cheaper to buy everybody. It's everybody who, they put it in some way, everybody who commutes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, was that more people or less people? But you could buy everybody that commutes a new Chevrolet Stax hatchback. And I don't know why they brought that up. It was at $15,000 each or something. I don't know. It's an inexpensive car. Yeah, well, I mean, you put those costs on it in that way, and you sort of skew the whole question. Because, you know, those prisoners down in Guantanamo prison in Cuba?
Yeah.
If you divide, and there's only like 100 or less left that are in there, but the operation of the whole facility, and if you divide by the number of prisoners, it's $2.5 million a year per prisoner.
Oh, okay.
Now, couldn't we just give them the money and they will retire forever on an island and maybe Hawaii? You know, I mean, I don't think they'll be terrorists anymore if they have all that. But, of course, they've been so terribly treated, my opinion, for so many years without trial, without adjudication of their situation. It's a horror. But I'm just saying it's unfair to even mention those things, like 2.7 million. For example, in Michigan, I think our prison system is Michigan. It's like $60,000 a year to room and board for a prisoner in a Michigan prison. Wow, that's a great income. They could support a whole family, you know. And but that's kind of information just means we do have a problem here. We're not using money most efficiently, and buying people cars is only going to increase congestion. And then I'm thinking, okay, we buy the car, will we pay for the insurance for them too? Because Detroit's insurance has skyrocketed. So I don't think buying everybody a car, even a cheap car, is good use of the money. That's just it's not going to work out that way.
Mm-hmm. And all the great access to education isn't worth that much if you don't have your good health, if you don't have health taken care of to begin with. You know. So
yeah,
that was my that's
well,
my comment on
I it. Agree there. And what I'm going to do right now is go online. I wanted to look up, let's see where it is here. Okay, I'm at this website and they've changed it. It's pressandguy.com, folks, one of our news sources here. And trying to find, there it is. Okay, Regan Ford back on August 26th, and he was a guest on the show, and he has written another editorial for this week that you can read about another issue, but and we might cover that next week. But he has written a in his August 26th op-ed piece. It's not the editorial of paper, but he has done some research, and he believes that we should vote this down. So I need to share, even though in our last 5 minutes, I need to share some of the highlights of his presentation. And you can read it if you just go to pressandguide.com and scroll down, click on opinions, and then not his first opinion, because his picture will show up first, but a little bit further down, because this is back from August 26th, they have his complete editorial there in case you missed it or don't subscribe, shame on you, to the local papers. He said detractors have two problems with this plan. First, studies suggest that mass transit isn't the cure-all for some policy that some policy wonks say it is. In other words, maybe more jobs for people or you know, better health or whatever that we heard last night. Secondly, Regan says, will raising taxes really bring people and investors back to Metro Detroit? In other words, if you have this better transportation, will it bring more investment? And he goes on to say, according to a Detroit News report, 2015 was the first time in 8 years that Wayne County did not lead the nation in population loss. It was second. So Regan questions, are people leaving southeastern Michigan for a lack of public education, of transportation? Education, too. Or is it high taxes, high crime, and lack of jobs? According to the State Business Tax Index, he says, New York State has both the highest tax burden and the largest mass transit system in the nation. New York also leads the nation in population loss, according to the Internal Revenue Service data. It's worth noting that states with the highest population gain were Florida and Texas, two states with relatively low taxes and no income tax. Policymakers, by the way, I mentioned Austin, Texas.
Right.
Well, the people of Austin have passed very high taxes for themselves to support all these great services that benefit everybody. So Austin is not typical of the rest of Texas.
Right, city taxes.
You won't find great transportation public transportation in Houston or Dallas or anywhere else, but Austin is a big, thriving community, and the people are happy to collectively share taxes for good schools and good transportation, and businesses are flocking in there like crazy to invest because it all has come together. So I think it's
a big college town.
It's a question. Oh, yeah, of course, University of Texas Austin there, and four or five others also. But and so Regan goes on to say, though, Wayne County has the seventh highest property taxes in the nation. Despite the outrageous tax burden, Wayne County roads are among the worst in the nation. The latest FBI uniform crime statistics show Detroit remains the most violent city in the nation. And that's just not just murder, but all kinds of crime, violent crime. Research also demonstrates Detroit public schools are among the worst in the nation. Yeah, well, I'm not sure transportation can tie into that. And that's a different funding source, the schools. So, okay. Nothing to cough at here. So Regan suggests voters need to answer two pertinent questions before November election. Is mass transit financially smart, and do people use it? Okay. And so think about that. I just want people to think of the question, and I'm summing up here. What do you feel is your responsibility to the other people in this community? John's not sure. I pointed to him. And
I didn't know what you were asking me. You were asking the
Well, I mean, everybody has to make a question there. If you believe that everybody should be on their own and they should get no help from the government at anything, for education, health care, and if you're not smart enough to pay for a school and get a job and work, then you don't deserve anything from the government. Okay. Or are there things that we have to do? Because we have certain people here. It's not an equal playing field. You know what I'm saying? In this society, we have people right now that are in a lot of trouble in terms of health, in terms of their safety, in terms of future education and possibilities to improve themselves. And they can't solve those problems themselves. They just can't. So society, all of us have to take on that burden and turn things around. And I'm just, I guess I'm suggesting you look at all the possibilities here. Definitely read Regan Ford's article. I don't think that these few, what do they call them, main thoroughfares are going to have better buses and light rail and so on in 5 years. It is going to cure too much.
No.
It's not going to change too much. But you've got a 20-year plan here. You're going to grow. You're going to develop. You're going to learn. You're going to coordinate from all the little services we have, like smart buses and individual community assistant programs like in Ann Arbor. I understand they've got great city buses and city transport. And how are they doing it? Well, maybe it can be a model for the rest of the area. But we're decades behind the other areas. And we're paying, according to my last point, Highway 61, coming right up. We're paying only an average of $69 a person for public transport in this area, by all estimates, okay? Looking at all the things we pay in different communities, the average in this area is $69 a person. We're not aware we do it, but various ways we pay it out. So these great communities like Toronto and Austin that put up more money, put up anywhere from $200 to $400 a person a year.
Okay.
This would only add $120 to our $69 for the average family. So it's nowhere even near what these other communities have decided to pay in, who are getting tremendous benefits from it for everybody. Okay. So that's what I think you have to think about too. Yes, you have to think about the cost and whether or not you can pay the extra $100 a year. But